This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the results, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome to the 1912 Exiles podcast, the Newport County podcast made by the fans for the fans. I'm Jamie Harris and I'm delighted to say that joining me on this episode, I've had not one but two debutants. We're in off season, so we've got some trialists one, trialists two. But first of all, we will give them their actual names. We're not doing a pre-season friendly here. First of all, we've got Dan Grace. Dan, good evening.
Hi, Jamie.
And also joining us on the podcast, we've got Yane Ellis. How you doing, Yane?
Not too bad. How are you doing, Jamie? Yeah,
I'm doing very well. Very well, because we've got lots to get through this evening. There's been so much going on over this June. It's probably the busiest June the club has had in quite some time. Before we do get into that, though, I just want to, you know, introduce yourselves to the podcast and the listeners. So, Dan, like, when did you start following the county? And probably the more important question to us Fairweather supporters, why?
So it started really early 2000s. So the first football game I went to was when Wales beat Italy at the Millennium. And I got really hooked on it then. Obviously thought football was going to be amazing, watching Wales beat Italy 2-1. And then I just wanted to go watch some more football, basically. So my dad and my grandfather took me over to watch County, the local team. And then it just grew from there, really. So a few less people at Spitty Park in those days than there were at the Millennium Stadium that night. But you get hooked, don't you?
Yeah, well, you get hooked if that's your first football game that you've attended. That's absolutely incredible. What a story. And Yane, welcome to the pod. When did you start following the county?
Probably early to mid-2000s when Wimbledon were in the Conference South. I thought, Wimbledon, they're a fan-owned club. If they can win it, so can we. And then we went and won it. And I thought, this football game's easy. Then, we did go up again. Then I had what could be described or was described as both the happiest and saddest burrito with Jamie, actually, watching the Great Escape via, I think, live football scores until the... Had a few beers, yep. not enjoying ourselves. 89th minute, the goal went in and it was like a light bulb had been flicked and...
Reignited
I've been much more religious in following. Exactly, much more religious in following since then.
Yeah, I remember that day well, the Great Escape. Unfortunately, we couldn't get over to Rodney Parade, but we shared we were planning on drowning our sorrows, but then it turned into a celebration. So what a day that was. Right, let's get straight into it. Like I say, we wanted a quiet summer. We were trying to explore fun things like football shirts and the club community's work. But there's been so much going on off the field in recent weeks. So yeah, we thought we needed to sort of pull some expertise together. So yeah, last month saw a trust meeting where the club revealed a 1.2 million hole in the books, which we explored in a previous episode where you might have heard Ed and Ollie reacted to that news. And then since then, there's been another trust meeting and the club AGM to sort of examine what might happen next. And then the same week, David Buttress, he took over the Dragons and Rodney Parade or Nets plans to, which could, you know, have ramifications. It could be good news for County, but it's a whole extra dimension of intrigue. It's really like fascinating stuff. Now, Dan, you were at the trust, you were at both of those trust meetings, weren't you? That's right. So, yeah, what were your sort of general, you know, initial reactions to, you know, what you heard at those meetings? You know, the idea that obviously we're looking for investment, we're looking at different types of models, maybe hybrid models or, you know, a potential sale, itself. Yeah, what's your sort of gut reaction? Did you come out of those meetings kind of, in a sort of buoyant mood, or were you concerned? How are you feeling?
I kind of got two sort of, they felt like two very separate meetings to me. So the first one, I think that Ed and Ollie covered in a previous episode. That one, you know, pretty shocking, really. It was pretty surprising to see those figures laid out right in front of you. Yeah, and there were some really tough questions asked to the board there. I think they were probably fair. They needed to, the questions needed to be asked. It was quite a it's quite a difficult atmosphere in the room that night, I felt. But then coming into the second meeting, obviously the one that's happened more recently, there was kind of quite, I felt like quite a bit of a change in the atmosphere in that one. It was more, now we know the situation, how do we move forward? So obviously you touched on there was the discussion about the three different options. And I do kind of feel like the board at the moment may have recognised in the past that, especially with communication, it might not have been as strong as it could have been. So yeah, at the last meeting, they laid out the three options. Obviously the trust model as it is, the hybrid model, and going into, well, getting rid of the trust pretty much altogether and going with that majority shareholder. But the last meeting was a lot more positive, I thought, and it really did feel like people have started to kind of rally around the situation and think about how we can move forward.
Yeah. It feels like, I don't know. I mean, I've kind of had the impression that we've maybe sleptwalked a bit into this situation, not necessarily the finance situation, because obviously we're always operating at a loss, like many clubs at our level are. But I just think it's like we sort of like relied maybe on this core group of, you know, trust members who obviously have a say and really sort of get things done. I was actually looking at the numbers. Like, I think it was announced that we have just under 1,000 trust members at the moment, which, like, when you compare it to other trust-owned clubs, and, you know, Exeter is always like held as like the, you know, team to sort of look up to, and they, I think they've got at least 4,000 or 5,000. I don't have the exact number to hand, but it's certainly a lot more than 1,000. Do you reckon we've maybe, I don't know, I may put this to you, Ian, do you reckon we've been a bit complacent with how we've sort of dealt with getting people involved and getting people to want to be involved in the trust?
I'd say definitely. I saw something on Twitter the other day where it laid out the different levels of membership you can have in the trust. And I thought there was just the one level. And I'm quite an enfranchised fan. I thought it was just the £5 level. And if you wanted to put a bit more in, you could. I didn't realize there were different levels with different benefits. And that feels like something the trust really should be advertising. And they've got my email address. They could have just sent something over. Do you want to bump it up to a tenner? Do you want to bump it up to £20 a month instead? And I probably would have done. But it's that sort of thing. They just sort of ticked it over. I can't remember exactly when it was. It wasn't too long ago. It went from £5 a year to £5 a month. And I thought that was a sensible thing to do then.
Yeah.
But it seems, now the board is quite a small group of people with various skills, but there do seem to be some gaps there that need to be filled, either with an outside appointment or some more volunteers to try and sort, because there must be people in the area who know how to properly market things and things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, yeah, what you're saying there as well, like, yeah, the people who are on the board, they've done a fantastic job with the, you know, let's be honest, they're, you know, a lot of volunteers, you know, it's fairly limited resources. And, you know, we've always on this pod given them the credit where it's due. But yeah, perhaps this is the time now where they can, and I think they have put out that they're, you know, obviously assessing the skills that they do have, and maybe the skills that they need to search for. And I think that comes in with at the same time as Dan, what you were saying with the trust and people wanting to sort of find a solution and people being maybe a little bit more active. I feel kind of more positive about it now. At least speaking to or hearing your sort of thoughts, Dan. You said like the second meeting was much more positive and buoyant. Was it just people literally just putting themselves forward, or was it just offering suggestions?
Is that I think it was more in the first meeting there were very tough questions asked to the board, which I think were justified. They definitely identified sort of gaps, especially in communication. I do sort of, in defense of the board a little bit, I think they may have realized the issue earlier this calendar year and obviously didn't want to distract from potentially, we didn't have our league status secured. So you can imagine if maybe they announced this was a potential issue, say in January, February time, you only have to look at other clubs in the Football League, how sort of off-field matters of distracted teams in the past. But I think that first meeting was, right, we've done wrong, here's your opportunity to ask questions, sort of understand how we got to this point. Second meeting was very much, we now understand the issue, how do we move forward? And I think, obviously, like social media, it can be pretty toxic sometimes, but on Twitter and Facebook lately, it has been great over the past week to watch people kind of mobilise and be sort of realise, you know, the club's in a bit of a hole at the moment. You know, we obviously have these options in the mid to long term of hopefully finding a potential investor, you know, but at the end of the day, that's not guaranteed. You know, we'd all like to think that we're going to find a person somewhere in Newport who's willing to, you know, pump money into our football club. But at the moment, we're a trust-owned club and there's that gap at the moment. So it's been great over the past few days to see people kind of mobilising and upping their trust membership, getting, you know, relatives, family involved and getting them to join the trust. That you can, I think you can definitely sense a bit of a shift now. I think we all have a collective responsibility as a trust-owned club, you know, to keep the club going.
Absolutely. And I feel kind of positive about it. You mentioned obviously looking for investment and looking for investors who are local. On the other side of the Rodney Parade coin, as it were, obviously we've had quite an interesting bit of news come out about the buyout of the Dragons from the WRU consortium led by David Buttress. Now we actually spoke with Mr. Buttress, I think it was a couple of years ago now during the pandemic, and we re-released that episode. So if you want to go back and listen to that episode, it's really interesting, listen. Yeah, and I'm just going to come to you because for the uninitiated into rugby and egg chasing, I have to admit I'm not the biggest or most knowledgeable rugby expert here. What's been going on in like a nutshell? I know you were telling me before we came on that we could do a whole episode on the Dragons and the turmoil that they face. But yeah, in a nutshell, what's been going on there?
In a nutshell, so I think it was 2017 when Newport and the Dragons were completely out of money and they couldn't afford anything. We're essentially going bust. But the WRU, Welsh Rugby Union, needed four regions to support the national team, so stepped in to buy the Dragons. And as part of that, they bought Rodney Parade from Newport RFC, or Newport Athletic Club, whichever one actually owned it, for, I think it was 2 or 3 million quid. It was a bit of a steal that they got the ground for. Fast forward a few years, the WRU has been looking for someone to buy the Dragons for a while. I don't know why it's taken this long to sort out, but the WRU have had some issues of their own to run over those. They've not invested wisely, whole hoo-ha about the board, but they seem to be sorting themselves out a little bit over time. And as part of that, they finally sold the Dragons. And I think it's good news that they sold the ground, or in the process of selling the ground, to David Buttress and consortium as well, though details of who is in his consortium is a bit short in terms of details. But I did see a tweet from David Buttress saying that his dad, who's a big County fan, wouldn't let anything bad happen, otherwise he'd be disowned. So I'm reasonably confident that that is going to be a good move. And I wouldn't be surprised to find out if with this new long-term lease, they're going to negotiate with, to use Rodney Parade, that there isn't some kind of, you can have it for a peppercorn, but I get X shareholding or something like that arranged in the background, because that's what I would do. But then I'm not the runner of a very successful business. So I think that would be a nice thing to do. I think I've spoken before to you, Jamie, separately about if we won the Euro Millions, what would you do? And my, if I won the Euro Millions, would be buy the Dragons, buy Rodney Parade, buy Newport County, maybe build two stadiums next to each other on the cabbage patch next to it, or something like that, so there's less pitch issues. This is money unlimited, obviously. But I think a guy like David Butchers, clearly a successful businessman, knows what he's doing, wouldn't do this without some kind of backing. And Newport County being a successful club is a very good revenue stream for the stadium he's just bought. So overall, I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, you could think in the back of his head, maybe there's a phase two that he's not told us about, that he's sort of eyeing up. But maybe it would, you know, bring in those two clubs together under like an umbrella ownership. Maybe that would make it a more attractive proposition for any future investment. I don't know. I mean, does that excite you, Dan, at all? Like the potential idea of like having this Newport community sports complex, you know, with two professional sports teams there.
Yeah, you could see it, couldn't you? It's nice to imagine. Yeah, you kind of think of maybe Swansea and the Ospreys, Swansea Stadium and the Ospreys is a bit of a model, maybe, if you're thinking of that. Obviously, they were in a similar situation, being trust owned, I guess, as a football club. I can't really pretend to be as much of an expert on the egg chasing as the Iron, but that would be nice, wouldn't it? But
yeah, exactly. We'll see. You never know. It could, it could come to fruition. It might not, but we can always dream, can't we? Yeah, and also, the potential, under one ownership, two clubs, it could mean things, other efficiencies on things such as, you know, the ticketing elements, the finance element, the club shop element as well. So it could be a more enticing proposition than another unknown investor. But I'm sure we'll just take what we can get right now.
I think that last point you were making, Jamie, there regarding future ownership as a whole, just kind of highlights how important it is that whatever decision is made going forwards, that if we bring some sort of external investment on board, that it is really carefully considered. Obviously, at the moment, we have a lot of control over our club being a trust-owned club. I know the communication has not been the best over the past probably couple of years, but obviously, if we get an external investor come on board, it could be entirely their prerogative whether they communicate with us or whether they don't. So obviously we're just thinking, you know, in regards to the Dragons and David Butchers, you mentioned a vision there, and it would be great if any potential investor has that sort of vision going forwards for County, because I think that's really important, that although mistakes have been made with the trust model in the past, we can't just accept anyone into our club. You know, it needs to be the right investor for Newport County, and it needs to be someone, if they're going to come on board, who's going to add value and take the club forward and hopefully progress us.
Yeah, I'd agree with what Dan said there, because we've seen what an unknown American investor can do to Newport County Football Club in the past. So let's be careful.
Yeah, I think that's a very valid point. All right, enough of that. Well, not doom and gloom. We're trying to be a bit positive about it, but admin and finances and things like that can be a bit boring to talk about. We're going to talk about some on the field stuff now, a bit more fun, or it would be if our long serving players didn't keep leaving us. We've lost Cam Norman. We've lost Priestley. As of, I think it was yesterday, we heard Aaron Lewis is leaving the club. We've released Matty Dolan already. Wilmot's gone. Lewis Collins is gone. There's been quite a few players who are who've now left the club. We're still waiting to hear on Mickey. I think if Mickey leaves, that could be a massive blow. Yeah, I mean, look, we obviously know about the financial situation. We know that, yeah, we've got a tight budget that we've got to adhere to. I mean, yeah, and do you feel a little bit, I don't know, how are you feeling about all of this? Like the fact that we're seeing the big names leaving us for also for teams in our league as well.
And it's not like they are stepping up or being tempted up a division. When Telford left, I could almost accept him going to Crawley because they've got a bit of cash behind them. But I think Aaron Lewis is going to Mansfield. A little bit of money there. But Priest is going to Walsall, I think. They're not the big money clubs you'd expect them to move to in the division. So it's, yeah, I think to go back a point, it does link in a little bit to how the club is being run. I think not chucking cash after players, no matter how good they are, is a sign the club is being well run, but also a sign that we need a bit more money. It is a shame to see them going, but you can't really blame the player either for this. It's a short career. They need to make as much money effectively as they can in the time. But I do think we're looking a little bit thin at the back now. It's going to be interesting to see who comes in, but I know.
Yeah.
Graham likes a bargain, so we'll see what he can find.
Yeah. Dan, is that where your concerns lay as well, the defence side of things?
Yeah. I don't think the midfield's looking too bad at the moment. Obviously, with Charles, who signed in January, Morris, still got Scott Bennett there, who I think is going to have a big role to play this season, especially with the leaders who've left. Will Digg, hopefully, could have a big season for us. But at the back, we are looking particularly light at the moment, especially right back. At the moment, you'd like to think that obviously we hope that Harrison Bright's got plenty of potential, and it's nice to see someone coming through. But I think he's pretty much our only out and out right back at the moment. So right back and centre back, especially, I think we're looking a little bit light. Potentially up top as well. I know we supplemented in January, getting the loan signings in with Kavanagh and McNeil. Hopefully Zanzala start fit for the start of the season, but we are looking a little bit light up top as well. So yeah, I think at the back and up top, we definitely need a couple more in.
Yeah. Right back's such a funny one, isn't it? Because we, over the years, we've either had this like ever present who's been like incredible. I'm thinking like, Liam Shepherd, recent years. And then, going back in further than that, I think we had Jackson there for a while and he moved up the leagues. But it's either that or it's just square peg round hole, like Robbie Wilmot playing at right wing back or something, or moving a centre half out there or something. So yeah, I think this is going to be the year where we're struggling with a right back unless we can find this incredible talent or Harrison Bright is ready for League Two action, which having not seen much of him, I'm not sure he is, to be honest with you.
I do think right back, especially when you look at the way we played last season. I mean, the amount of goal kicks that Day and Townsend used to try and aim at Cam Norman, he's quite unique in being such a tall fullback. Obviously, we're so used to some of the smaller fullbacks. He was such a good outlet for us to kind of hit those dead balls. It was a big part. He wins the flick-ons. He won so many fouls for us in dangerous positions. Cam Norman was such a unique player for us that I do think that's going to be something that's quite difficult to replace.
Yeah, and he chipped in with a few goals as well. I think the last game I was at Gillingham, he got one of the goals, which is fantastic. I think we're also maybe missing a bit of his sort of wind-up antics as well. I think we're going to have to rely on James Clark to do that, aren't we? To be the wind-up merchant of the side. But yeah, Dan, you mentioned like you feel like we're looking all right in midfield. That kind of brings us on to some of the newer signings that we brought in. Obviously, I mean, we did bring in a centre half, Kyle Jameson, who is not the New Zealand fast bowler. But yeah, in midfield, we've got Bryn Morris, who's sort of come over. We've got Nathan Wood as well. How are you feeling about those signings in particular and how they'll maybe complement the likes of Bennett and Charlesley?
Nathan Wood, I find quite exciting. It's interesting that we're starting to, more and more look at the Welsh Premier League as a kind of, I don't think there's too many other clubs in League Two who are really looking at that market for players. But obviously Priestley came from there and has served us really well. Will Evans, he's done really well. So I think it's, Nathan Wood, I don't think we can expect too much of him straight away. He's got to adapt to the Football League a little bit. But hopefully that's another one that could come good for us.
Maybe we should be utilising our connections with these Welsh League clubs a lot more, obviously because nobody else is right now.
I think we should. I think it's not necessarily an untapped market, but if you consider the kind of players we're recruiting, we're either going to be recruiting from Cymru Premier or Conference North, Conference South, Conference or National League, sorry, level players. And a lot of scouts, if you're going to pick someone playing from the Conference or the National League, just for the density of clubs, but there's going to be fewer looking around the Welsh League. So I think there's definitely going to be gems there, and we've found some. And I think we'll find more gems more frequently. I think we'll find some decent amounts. It's going to take a few punts, I think, and some won't pay off, but that's the nature of it.
Yeah, and of course, the guy we got through is James Waite as well, who I still feel he's waiting for his breakthrough season, and Will Evans. There's a load of them. I think Will Evans is going to have his breakthrough season next year. I want James Waite to do well, but I'm just a little bit concerned that he's maybe not quite got the, you know, what we need at this level. Don't know what you think about that, Dan.
Well, it's interesting, obviously, talking about next season. You've got two players there. Will Evans, I know when he played in the Welsh Leagues, he was a left winger. James Waite, I know, played off the right. So we're obviously assuming that Coughlin's going to go stick with his 3-5-2 or 5-3-2, whatever you want to call it. But those players, they give us options, you know, to potentially move to a 4-3-3 or a 4-2-3-1, something like that, if Coughlin decides to go that way. So, yeah, I really like the idea of looking at the Welsh Leagues. I think I can't really name one off the top. I'm sure there has been one, but I can't name one off the top of my head over the last few years where we've took a punt on them and they've not ended up getting considerable game time for us.
Absolutely. So what about some of the other signings? We've got Bryn Morris in from Grimsby and Matty Bonswell, a defender, in on loan from Newcastle.
Bryn Morris, I know he's not, I don't think he's played above, I might be wrong, but I don't think he's played above 30 games in a season for quite a while. So if we can keep him fit, he could be a good signing for us. But I think that's going to be the main thing. Bonswell is the one that kind of excites me. You'd like to think, I think he spent some time at Leipzig. I know he got some caps for the England youth sides. He went on loan to Shrewsbury, I think, last season. I know he couldn't get a game, but you'd like to think with that pedigree, there must be something about him, and hopefully he can maybe be a bit like Adam Lewis was down that left flank for us. But I mean, it's part of the fun of League Two, isn't it? You never really know until the first day, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, I was actually going to say, I put some questions to the other chaps from the 1912 Exiles pod, and our man on the Northern Beat, Ian Street, he's got a Grimsby mate, and he says, basically, Bryn Morris is exactly the person to keep it simple in midfield, competent and unspectacular, but does what he does well. Sounds a bit like Scott Bennett, doesn't it? I think our issue, particularly last season, was a bit of creativity or lacking creativity in midfield. So, hopefully the sort of more attacking prospects, maybe Charlesy would be the one sort of like getting those chances created. But really, it could be the season, defining season for big Omar Bogle up front. Yeah, he got a lot of goals last season. Yeah, and of what you've seen of Bogle, are you hoping he'll kick on? Are you hoping he'll have his sort of breakout season? He'll be top scorer in League Two. He'll get 30 goals for us and he'll take us up, or am I dreaming?
He might be dreaming a little bit the same way I was dreaming about David Butchers taking us over. I think he's going to have a good season, but it depends how we play him. There was an assessment on this podcast, I think, that I agree with quite well, where when we played him as a big target man, that wasn't his game, despite being a big lad. When we play him as the creative attacker, he scores goals, and he started to get back into the swing of things quite nicely towards the end of the season. It's just, are we able to keep him well supplied? I think we will be able to, but it's whether we'll be losing games 4-3, that kind of thing, with the lack of depth at the back. So I think he will have a pretty good season. If he has a pretty good season, it'll probably be his last season with us, because that's the way these things work. But I've got faith he'll do a pretty good job.
I had a sort of lot of thoughts about Bogle at the back end of last season, in particular the type of player that we would play. You know, we play that sort of little man in McNeil or Kavanagh running off him. I'm not convinced that's what he needs. I don't know what you think, Dan. Well, the kind of strike partner that Omar Bogle needs to succeed.
Yeah, it's a difficult one, isn't it? Because I think, like Yaya touched on, you know, I think you've got to play him in the in the right way. I'm still quite hopeful that Zanzala, you know, he seems to have been so unlucky with injuries over the past couple of years, not just last season. If we could keep him fit, there was definitely something there, you know, between the two of them that they could work well off of each other. You kind of almost need someone, I think, to occupy the space for Bogle. Whereas sometimes it kind of feels like you're using Bogle as the person to occupy the space for someone else. So, yeah, it's a difficult one with him. I do think, though, to be fair, second half of the season, he really did seem to relish sort of trying to bring on those younger players. And especially, like I touched on earlier, with us losing a couple of leaders, you know, I'm quite negative about the Mickey situation. I think he's probably going to go. But, you know, Bogle, I think, is going to have a big role in being that, you know, within probably that leadership group. You're looking at Bennett, Clark, Bogle. So he's going to be a big player for us next season. But yeah, all about how we use him.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think particularly the young lads who probably will get a little bit more game time, and that Kiban Rai as well is probably going to get a few more games. He got a couple of sub appearances and a start at the back end of last season. Yeah, you're going to need that experience and that leadership. And maybe that's what he needs. He just needs, you know, the responsibility of that leadership. One area where we're certainly not short is in the goalkeeping department. As Nick Townsend signed on for another season of battling it out with Joe Day for the number one spot. Ian, were you surprised that he signed on? Maybe this is going to be the season where he's going to start as number one again.
I was a little bit, because he's a decent League Two keeper. He probably shouldn't be on the bench as often as he is, but then Joe Day is also a very good League Two keeper and has had pretensions of being more than a League Two keeper in the past. So I don't know which one I would pick on any given day, because when I've watched games, and well, one of those made a mistake, you think, oh, Joe Day would have saved that, or oh, Nick Townsend would have saved that. But I also think it's a good thing to have two competent keepers keeping each other honest.
Absolutely. Dan, if you were Graham Coughlin, who are you starting opening day?
I think I'd probably go with Townsend just about, but I'd agree with you, Ian. They're both two solid League Two goalkeepers. We're quite lucky in that regard. I'd just like to pick one, to be honest, though. I think it helps in defence, you know, having, you know, more of a settled back line, and I just kind of sometimes think it can't help chopping and changing all the time. I'd like just one to be picked. So I'm not too fussed on who, but I'd like us just to stay consistent with one for at least the first couple of months of the season, I think.
That, I mean, we've spoken before on this pod, but we feel it really kind of dents the keeper's confidence if you have one bad game and you get dropped. Obviously, if you have a series of bad games, you can get dropped. But then, of course, you've had a series of bad games, which as a goalkeeper, if you do that, it probably costs your team points. So it's it's a real real difficult situation, and that's why Graham Coughlin's paid the big bucks to make these decisions. All right, yeah, we're going to leave it there. We will be back with future episodes before the season kicks off. As I mentioned earlier, we've re-uploaded the David Buttress interview, which we did a few years ago. Yeah, we've got another episode coming out in a week's time, Ed was saying, and it'll be a welcome palate cleanser after the recent doom and gloom, as Ed spent a few hours over at Rodney Parade last month chatting with the county and the community about the work they do, and hearing from participants in their Fit Fans program. Yeah, it's a really uplifting reminder of some of the really excellent work the club support in the community. So do tune into that. But with all this bonus content, we've had to shout out a bit of extra for hosting these excellent pods for you this month. So if people do want to chip in towards the cost, there is a link in the show notes to our Ko-fi account, ko.fi account, where you can just throw in a quid or two towards our running costs. Or if you're interested in being a sponsor of the pod next season, we'd love to hear from you. You get a mention in every episode, regular social media plugs. Our DMs are always open, so do reach out if you're interested in that. But until then, it remains me to thank very much to both of our debutants, Dan Grace and Ian Ellis. Really appreciate you coming on and sharing your views on everything that's going on at the club. But yeah, until then, as always, everyone, keep it county.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.